Welcome to Building the Future, hosted by Kevin Horick. With millions of listeners a month, Building the Future has quickly become one of the fastest rising programs, with a focus on interviewing startups, entrepreneurs, investors, CEOs, and more. The radio and TV show airs in 15 markets across the globe, including Silicon Valley. For full showtimes, past episodes, or to sponsor the show, please visit buildingthefutureshow.com.
Do you have an app idea that you've been dreaming about but don't know how to actually start building it? Use Bubble. I've been using Bubble for a number of years now. It's an extremely powerful no-code platform that enables you to build, launch, and scale real products without investing thousands of dollars on engineers, designers, or spending time trying to code it yourself. Use Bubble's visual drag-and-drop tool to create really anything from marketplaces, SaaS products, and so much more. Join over 2 million people, including myself, already using Bubble to launch and grow businesses. Welcome back to the show. Today we have Scott Miller. He's the author of Media Matters. Scott, welcome back to the show.
Kevin, glad to be with you. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on the show today. I think what you wrote Media Matters about, well, let's be honest, every startup and or business struggles with this, no matter if it's day one or, you know, they've been around for decades, in my opinion. But maybe before we get into all that stuff, let's get to know you a little bit better and start off with where you grew up.
Yeah, so I grew up in the Texas area. I grew up actually in Waco, Texas, and that might be a city that people are familiar with, most notably or most recently from the fame, the Fixer Upper cable TV show is shot in my hometown of Waco.
Oh, cool. Very cool, man. So you went to university. What did you take and why?
So I went to a small college in Texas, Howard Payne University. Okay. I studied communications. I knew in high school that I wanted to get into media. And honestly, Kevin, it started off with an interest in sports initially. I realized that I grew up in the shadows of Baylor University. Didn't go to Baylor, but I realized that the guy who got to broadcast the games got paid to go to the games. And I thought, that sounds like a fun job. But I chose I chose my college because it's a small community. So I was able to really launch into working at a radio station day one, because it was a smaller community. So when I graduated, it took me 5 years working full time, but I graduated with 5 years experience and a degree. So it worked out well for me.
Very cool. So walk us through your career, maybe some highlights along the way up into coming up with the idea for the book, and then let's dive into that.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, as I mentioned, sports was my interest. I did do sports for a while, covering high school sports, some college, doing play-by-play, but started off on-air DJ, working at a country station, worked into my way into being the news director at the same station, covering local news. So I was news and sports director, won a couple of AP awards. That got the attention of a station in the Dallas-Fort Worth larger market. They hired me to come on and be the news director and sort of build up their news team. Got into morning news on the faith-based side. I worked for a Christian station in the Metroplex and sort of a series of events. Got offered an opportunity in my 20s. It really was an opportunity of a lifetime, building a Christian talk station for Sirius satellite radio. And this is when Sirius was brand new. Right. And they had just signed on Howard Stern, and this is before they merged with XM. And that sort of thrust me on the national side, on the programming side. The company I work for, they also had a TV network, and I did a lot of program sales. And they saw what I was able to do on the radio side, and they asked me if I could do the same on the TV side, which got me into television. And my career just continued to advance. I spent a decade building a company, Center Post Media. We had Biz TV, Biz Talk Radio, and really focusing on entrepreneurship and out of that, you know, when you ran a run in a format like Biz TV, you're sort of front and center, you're meeting entrepreneurs, you're starting to understand what their needs are. I created a content marketing agency to really help them market their business. But Kevin, what I learned and sort of the catalyst of why I started the book or wrote the book was I learned how much education was lacking in most entrepreneurs. They knew they needed to market their business. They just didn't know where to begin, or they didn't understand, you know, things like what are ratings mean. And so I just felt like, as someone who enjoys writing, I felt like I needed to write a book. And that's really what it is. It's an education where if you want to spend marketing dollars, spend them wisely. And that's why I wrote Media Matters.
No, very cool. So let's dive a little bit into what exactly do you cover in the book? And obviously, I think it's super important. And you're right. I think as somebody that's, you know, working on startup, it's such a daunting thing. And it's very easy to either not know where to start or basically, you know, spend thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars with sometimes really good results, sometimes not so good results, and kind of everywhere in between.
Well, there's so many people out there, unfortunately, that are happy to take your money, that don't really care whether or not you get good results. And I think that's sure. where so many business leaders struggle. The other thing is, let's be honest, you know, marketing dollars is usually the first thing that people will cut in a budget or the last thing they'll spend. You know, if you're starting a business, you have to spend money on whatever it is. You know, in the tech world, you have to spend money on the technology, the development of the technology. If you do have a brick and mortar, you have to pay your rent and your electricity bill. If you have staff, you need to pay their salaries. So marketing is always one of those things that people are like, oh, I got to cut, you know, inflation's going on, money's tight, I'll just cut my marketing. Well, what they don't understand is you're really cutting off future sales. And so, you know, as far as what I cover in the book, the first thing is to understand that media is dramatically changing. You know, you talk a lot about technology. I mean, media has been in a hurricane of changes over just the last 5 years. Sure. And so I think, you know, the first part of the book is just helping you understand why it's changing and how you can take advantage of those changes.
Right. Okay. So why does it matter? Because obviously we know that everybody and their dog has a podcast these days. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I think it's actually really good and it's really helped a lot of people. But I know based on the people I've talked to and even my own show numbers, like it's not even worth me doing this show if it was just a podcast, because the traditional media like AM, FM radio and the cable TV networks I'm on blow the numbers, the podcast numbers out of the water. And obviously, like, I'm not Oprah or any of the top podcasters, and their numbers would be, you know, probably way better, obviously, like way better than even all my stuff combined. But I think people think they're going to start a podcast and get, you know, a million listens, and that's obviously attainable at some point, but it's a huge amount of time and effort where majority of people's numbers are in, you know, double digits per episode, maybe, you know, in the hundreds. Maybe you get lucky and one of your episodes takes off and it does maybe a few thousand listens or beyond that, but that's kind of the reality. Do you agree with that, or what are your thoughts around that?
I do agree with it. You know, there's more content available today than in the history of content. You know, I spend more time, you know, you mentioned the podcast, but I spend more time at home trying to figure out what I'm going to watch than actually consuming something, right? I got so many different apps. So yeah, you know, the content marketing side of things, why create a podcast? And so if I'm advising you, the first thing I'm going to do, of course, every situation is different, is learn what your business is, learn what's best for you. But you're right. Podcasting is never about monetizing off of the podcast itself, because it's lightning in a bottle. There are some very popular podcasts that are making a lot of money off of programmatic advertising. But for the majority of us, it's really about creating content that does two things. One, it gets you direct results. So when people tune in and listen to your show, Kevin, and understand what it is you do, very quickly they realize that you are an expert in your field. And so you will have the direct results of people reaching out saying, I want to work with you. And then you have the indirect results. I like to kind of call it the cocktail napkin approach to marketing. And what I mean by that is, you know, you're at a party and somebody asks you what you do. You're not just the guy who understands technology. You're the guy that has a podcast on it. And there's something very powerful about media that you can use that. So you can make money off of it, but you got to look at it differently. And then the third thing is you can use this podcast. And Kevin, you understand this, but you can use this podcast to invite the people you want to reach. You know, 100%. It's like, hey, will you come and talk to me in a podcast? Oh, well, that sounds cool. Sure, I'll do that. Where otherwise, if you're trying to reach out and just do a cold call, they probably, you know, may not talk to you or may take a long time before you get on their calendar.
Well, even you and I, that's a perfect example, is the chances of the two of us ever meeting or talking are pretty slim just by chance, unless maybe we're at a conference or something, whatever, right? But without this show, you and I probably wouldn't have ever connected or met unless it was just kind of maybe by fluke luck. Right. And like, that's the perfect example. And I have, and I don't mean this as to brag, but it's like, I've done this. I have 500 plus episodes. Right. So think about how big that network is. I've had some of those people back on the show a few times. I've been able to connect with people that have done amazing things where I probably would have never been able to exchange emails with them, or they would have deleted my email. But, you know, I got to talk to them for an hour on it, on the show, right? Which has been amazing. And I've said this a million times, but just so for your context, it's like, I started this show really to get over my fear of public speaking. And it's been, you know, 7+ years at this point. So to your point is, I do the show for other reasons other than trying to like make a ton of money being a radio host.
And often you'll find that people will give you personal contact information when you attach content to it. So not only are you making these connections, having these hour long conversation, but all of a sudden they're giving you, here's my cell phone number. Here's my, you know, it's just the power of media, and it really does work. And the brilliance of what you do, Kevin, if I can brag on you, is when you bring a host on or you bring a guest on and you make it about them, asking them questions, it just puts them at ease and you build that relationship faster.
100% agree. So I'm curious then, how do, maybe let's give examples of the different types of media and how people can actually, you know, leverage the content in the book to actually, you know, get on different shows or start being successful at social media and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So one of the things I do, because there is so many different types of media, is I actually break it down by chapter on the different forms. So, you know, we were talking about audio media just now, and that really kind of covers podcasting, or, you know, radio is still very much alive. People still listen to traditional radio. And so we kind of give examples in that regard, but written media is another example. Sort of the low hanging fruit is to write a weekly blog.
Sure.
Write what you know, write about the information you know, because it does two things. And not only you can use it, you can push it out on social media, you can get an email client and push it out, you know, through MailChimp or one of those types of services, but it's also great for your website. You know, Google, we all know Google's still the king of the internet right now. You know, they're looking for search engine optimization. They're looking for you have fresh content. And by the way, you can use your podcast to do the same, posting to your website and doing video. But you know, that's written form. So, you know, the book in itself is a form of content marketing. You know, just like I'm on your show because you have a podcast, you're interviewing me because I have a book. So
yeah,
100%. It does open windows. Yeah. So that's another form. And so we talk about that and the video side of it as well, you know, creating video, so many studies out there now that if you don't have video on your website, you're losing business. 88% of people that watch a video are more likely to make a purchase from you after watching a video. So we kind of go into that. And so there are different examples, but if I can, I'll just say one thing. And we're talking about podcasting and different forms. You have informative, which is what you and I are doing. It's very informative. People listen to it. They're going to walk away with a nugget, something that they can put into practice and use. And then you have entertainment. So in the book, I talk in an example of my friend, Gary Leland. Kevin, I don't know if you know Gary, but he is one of the founders of the podcast movement, largest convention of podcasters. Sure. And what I love about Gary is he's not a trained broadcaster. You know, he wasn't like me. He didn't go to college to learn communications. He's a business guy. And for the longest time, he and his wife own a wallpaper business, selling wallpaper. Now, what kind of a podcast would you put together to promote wallpaper, right? I mean, what were you going to do? It's going to sound boring. Well, I mentioned my hometown of Waco and Chip and Joanne. Well, they actually created a podcast based on Fixer Upper so that each week they talked about the most recent episode of Fixer Upper, and they drew in thousands of fans that love the show that wanted to talk about it and listen to it, which, by the way, was brought to you by Leland's Wallpaper. So you can do an entertainment type content and then sponsor it with your business.
Got it. No, that's actually really good advice. So I know, and it's getting a lot easier with, you know, Grammarly and ChatGPT and a bunch of other AI writing content. But I find, as somebody that's struggled with writing myself, I don't think I'm a very good writer, period. Ever, never have, probably never will be. I've, you know, leveraged some of these tools when I've needed to do that. But I find, sure, you can get ideas, but it's really hard sometimes to generate ideas of what to even write about or, you know, put out there. So how do you, or what advice do you give to people that are struggling with that? Because I think everybody does, no matter what type of business you're in.
I think it's a fair question. I would always start with just a reminder, you are the expert in your field, and you don't need a blog or a podcast to be the expert. All of these different platforms do is really shine a light on what is already reality. So when you write, you really want to write on what you're comfortable with and what you know. Okay. And write in a way that just, you know, if you were to go sit down and talk about your business or talk about part of your industry or go on a sales call, you naturally start to just talk about, you know, what you know, because it just comes natural. I mean, you know it, right? You don't have to think about it. And so I encourage, you know, in the writing part, you know, write from that perspective. You know, certainly if it's writing something you struggle with, you know, have somebody proof it before you publish it. And great news is there's so many crowdsourcing options out there to do that. But, you know, it's just about writing what you know. And then I always say write from a personal perspective. And I don't mean like get personal in your life, but don't be afraid to just, you know, write who you are, because people, what they want at the end of the day from a podcast, from a blog, from a video, more than anything else, they just want you to be authentic. They want you to be who you are. And so I don't think people are looking for a really polished blog as much as they are, what is your perspective on something, and what can I learn from it? What's going to cause me to want to subscribe to that and come back every single time? And so that's, and then the final thing really is consistency. And I think when you talk about content marketing, whether it's a podcast or a blog or whatever you do, do it on a consistent basis. Don't write a blog once every now and then. You're never going to build the following you want. So what I did, Kevin, when I wrote a blog, is I actually put on my calendar, I blocked off time to write. And when it popped up, that was sort of my writing time. And I often wrote what was on my mind. And for me, I use the blog, again, appealing toward entrepreneurs and business owners. I try to write on subjects and what you go through to just kind of relate to you. So for example, you know, one of my blogs I wrote was how to stay motivated on a Monday morning. You're coming off the weekend and now you're trying to re-engage. just some practical things I do as a business owner to get my mind re-engaged. So it wasn't like deep thoughts. It was just sort of thought provoking, but I used that to draw in business owners to our website. And then we sold our product and services, right? Which in our case was marketing.
Right.
So you can hire ghostwriters. You can outsource that. I'm not a fan of that. I mean, you can do that. The main thing is if you're going to hire someone to write for you, make sure they're speaking, you know, the way you want them to speak. Make sure they're representing you.
No, I think that's really good advice. And I want to touch on one thing that I think is super important is you mentioned that people want it to be like kind of honest and raw and it doesn't have to be polished. And I would say that's been so true for myself. I've heard the feedback before that, because I was kind of early on in the podcasting space. Again, I'm not trying to brag. I'm just trying to tell you like the reality of it is like people liked that I was like kind of brutally honest, good, bad or other. And I wasn't kind of this like polished host, right? And I wasn't like some of my early episodes, I always tell people like, go listen to them. They're brutal. Like, and fair enough. But the reality is like, if I could struggle through it, anybody could struggle through it because I was trying to get over my fear of public speaking, especially in the early episodes, right? And so I think some of my favorite podcast episodes are those early kind of raw episodes where they're almost like not even edited. So I think so many people think that it needs to be this like perfect polished thing and spend an astronomical amount of time trying to get it there where obviously it doesn't. I think sometimes it just the rawer, the better and the more brutally honest you are, the better. It sounds like you would agree with that.
Yeah, well, it's you know, in the world of social media, when we all tend to gravitate toward putting just only the good stuff on there, right?
Yeah.
We're not posting on there about a horrible day or the stupid thing we did. And I think people are so tired of that.
Yeah.
And listen, you're never going to compete with a major budget. You know, there's well-produced podcasts out there that are coming. But even those, like, go and look at what the networks are doing. Like NBC's creating content on different shows. Even those are raw and just sort of behind the scenes with actors. So I do think people just want, you know, there's a hunger for community. And the other thing about podcasting, it's such a personal medium. Mm-hmm. So television, I have to sit down, decide what I'm going to watch, typically watching it with the family. But the podcast, I listen to on the way to work, right? By myself. I feel like Kevin's talking to me directly. And so because of that, having it be authentic and be who you are, I think just really resonates with the listener. And it is what people want. They want to learn from you. And when you can be honest and talk about your struggles, it just makes you more human.
100%. So let's move on to audio. What advice do you give to that? Because I think as more and more people start podcasts, it's a bit daunting. And like, what how do you work with people and what advice do you have in the book about, you know, launching a podcast or doing some sort of audio thing online?
Well, there are a lot of resources out there, right? A lot of platforms you can go to as far as getting your content published. But on the audio side, I will tell you, I advise you need clean audio, even if you're creating video. Like if you're creating a video, you want what's funny is the video cannot be perfect.
100%.
And someone will have patience with that, but if they can't understand what you're saying, they're gone.
Yeah.
And so you need clean audio. So you don't have to spend a ton of money. There's a lot of products out there. You know, you can invest in if you're just getting started in a decent microphone, you could spend $40 or $50.
100%.
I've done that before. I mean, I've got a little studio where I've spent over $100 for a mic. So it just depends on what your budget is, but you need clean audio. As I just said a while ago, you know, kind of to, you know, talk to one person. That's my advice. You know, in my career, I have coached a lot of on-air talent for television and radio. And the first thing I tell anyone on radio is talk to one person. And then when you get into actually publishing, go ahead, Kevin. Sorry.
No, I was just sorry. I want to interrupt you there. When you say talk to one person, what exactly do you mean by that? Like if there's a panel of a few people, just like talk to each person after they answer, ask you a question? Or what do you mean by that exactly?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if you are doing a podcast and you're just by yourself, we'll get to the interview here in just a moment. But let's just say you're going to do a podcast. When you're talking, visualize that you're talking to one person versus a room of people.
Got it.
And so that makes it, it's just a psych, it just does a little nuance where if I'm listening to you, it really comes across like you're talking just to me. Okay. And then in an interview situation, you almost want to visualize like one person is in the room eavesdropping. Think about like if you're at a restaurant and you got someone and you're having a conversation with a friend and there's someone next to you at a booth by themselves and you know they hear everything that you're saying, right? You just know. It's almost like they're eavesdropping in on your conversation. And the reason why we coach talent to do that is because, again, the most personal form of media is the audio media, because most people consume it just by themselves. You know, they're in the car by themselves, so they're listening in their headphones. So that's what I mean by talk to one person. If you go on there and you kind of create it like there's a mass amount of people, it just does, again, you lose some of that authentic sound to it. And it's just not good radio.
Sure. No, makes 100% sense. And I think that's actually really excellent advice. Let's move on to video, because I think that's a whole other animal and it can be very challenging and people's nerves and even the host nerves sometimes, right?
Sure. Yeah. The thing with video, I mean, there are some simple things from a technical standpoint, not to get too nerdy with you, but you know, when you're shooting video, again, amazing times. I could pick up my smartphone and get 4K quality video. 100%. It's just, it's ridiculous. But there's some things you want to consider. You never want to shoot a video where the light is behind you. So take time to frame up the shot where the light is in front of you and you're not having the glare on the camera. You know, when you look at how you dress, solid colors are always better on video versus a pattern that's real busy and distracting. Those are some things to think about. When you create a video for social media, less is more. You know, really under 2 minutes, but even that's getting faster. People's attention span is just really short, so you want to create snackable videos if you're posting them on social media. The other thing you want to consider is make sure the video is closed caption. Most people, when they're scrolling on social media, will have their audio on mute. You think about if you're on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and you're scrolling through, the video will start to play, but they don't actually hear it. So that closed caption allows them to read what you're talking about. And then if they're interested, they'll click on it and hear the audio. The other thing you want to do is upload, again, for social media, upload all of those videos in native form. Don't link the video to another site. So one of the biggest mistakes I see people that are new to the business is they'll put it on YouTube and then they'll put a link on Facebook to YouTube. Well, here's the thing. Yeah. Facebook wants you to stay on Facebook. So the algorithms are going to be more in your favor if you upload that in the native form. So upload it right to Facebook and then do the same thing on YouTube, do the same thing on the other platforms. You're going to get more results, you know, for those videos than you would if you're asking Facebook to send somebody somewhere else. If you have a business page, I'll tell you right now, you need to spend money to get your video or any content discovered, because again, once you declare your business, guess what? Facebook's a business too, and they want to make money. So you actually get more results off a personal Facebook page than you do a business. But you don't have to spend a lot of money if you are going to market it on Facebook. I can go on in details on tips on that, but just overall in video, clean audio, and closed captioning, and upload it native form.
Sure. The other, I want to add one thing because it burnt me recently and I should have caught it, is if you use a ring light and you're recording video, sometimes that ring light gets picked up in somebody's glasses and it's basically impossible to edit out without a reshoot, or it's going to take you a ton of time. And the only reason I say it is because, like I said, it burnt me really like recently, and I was just like, well, that was dumb.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I've got, like, if you were in my office at my house, because I just think about these things, I have a light that shines on me, and I've got a, listen, this is a cheap way to do it, but just a piece of construction paper over it so that it doesn't have the glare on my glasses, because I wear glasses. So, right. You know, those are the nuances you can think about when you're shooting a video, for sure.
Nope, that's good advice. So I want to dive a little bit deeper into what you just mentioned, though, with spending money on Facebook. And you said you don't need to spend a lot. What's not a lot?
So, you know, the thing about Facebook, and I always have this disclaimer, social media, websites, all of them constantly will change their algorithms. So what is true today will change. That's kind of my disclaimer. But one of the things you can do with Facebook is they're looking for you to be a preferred advertiser. And a preferred advertiser is someone who spends money with them every single day over a period of 30 days.
Okay. Does that mean, does the money value not matter there, or it does?
So, Kevin, if I can pause for just a moment, there's a dog barking in the background. Are you picking that up, or are we good?
We're barely. It should be good, but I can edit that out.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure for answer the question. So, sorry about that.
All good, man.
Okay.
You want me to ask the question again?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, sure. So when you said Facebook, like, how much money were you talking about? Like, is it, because, you know, you could spend a ton of money there. So, like, when you say not a lot of money, what do you exactly mean by that?
So I've seen a campaign where we've spent $1 a day, just $1 a day on Facebook. Doesn't get you a tremendous amount of results, to be fair. But what it does is it puts you in that category as, okay, you know, again, it's all computers.
Right.
It gets you in that category of they're spending money with me, you know, with Facebook every single day, so that your regular posts, the ones you're not boosting, sees better results than if you don't spend any money with Facebook. But here's what I do like about Facebook. You can get super granular when you do advertise. So we had a client one time that was a wedding chapel in Las Vegas. Okay. And so they're looking for people that want to fly to Vegas and obviously get married at their wedding chapel. So we spent on their behalf, we did a campaign where we chose cities that had a quick flight. So we bought Los Angeles, you know, Dallas, Phoenix, you know, real close to Vegas. And we were able to actually, through Facebook, say we're looking for people who are considering getting married. You know, everything you search online, Facebook knows. So you can get very targeted with your digital advertising and spend your dollars wisely.
Got it. Okay. What about other social media and kind of SEO platforms? What advice do you give to people to kind of grow your audience, whether it's a business or startup or kind of both?
Well, on the SEO side, you know, search engine optimization is very key. And I think what most businesses don't understand is that SEO is an ongoing thing. It's not something 100%. You do once. Yeah. And so a lot of people, you know, they'll build their website. They're like, oh, I paid for SEO. And no, you got to constantly keep that fresh and update it. And so that's, you know, want to make sure you have proper keywords, have links back to your website, creating fresh content. That's what's key for SEO. On other social media platforms, a lot of it depends on, you know, what demographic are you trying to reach? You know, a lot of what I do is B2B, so LinkedIn's more important to me. So if I spend any marketing dollars, it's usually going to be on LinkedIn. That's going to be my focus. Facebook, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, Facebook's dying. It's really not. Facebook's still in the top five websites that people go to. So they still look for you on Facebook. If I am, you know, more visual in my product, I might consider Instagram. And then if I'm looking to reach a younger demographic, I'm going to look at some of these other sites that are out there, Snapchat and, TikTok. Of course, this TikTok may not be even available if you follow mm-hmm. the trend. So,
sure.
But there are other sites out there to spend dollars on.
Interesting. I guess you kind of need to go where your target market is, because obviously, like, certain generations and age ranges are more on Facebook than others, and Instagram, et cetera, right?
Demographics to me is most important when you're considering spending marketing dollars. I think too often we get caught up in total reach.
Yeah,
I'm more interested in demographics and results. So, you know, I use the example, this is sort of a traditional media platform example, but when we sold Biz TV, it's a very niche format. It's business content. I mean, people who are watching Biz TV are interested in business content. So naturally, it's not a large general market, you know, viewership. But if I'm talking to someone who say office supplies and they ask, well, what's your ratings? My response was like, well, what's more important to you? How many people see your ad or how many people respond to your ad?
Yeah.
And I think that's key no matter what the platform is.
Sure. So do you have advice to figure out those demographics and where they are, whether that's there's free ways to do that or paid ways to do that?
Well, the question you need to ask when you're talking to somebody else's platform is ask for that data. They have it available. Okay. Whether it's through a rating services, if it's your own platform and you want to know what demographics am I reaching, the first thing I recommend is you do Google Analytics. Google Analytics is free to set up. I promise you, I'm not getting endorsed by Google. It's just the tools that are out there. So when you set up Google Analytics, what I did, and this is, Kevin, just kind of how I work, I wanted to understand it. So I went online and actually got Google Analytics certified, which, by the way, is free. And they teach you how to do it. You watch a series of videos and they show you how to set it up properly where you're not tracking the bots. You're actually only tracking humans. Once you do that and you track it over a period of time, you start to learn who's interested in your content, who's coming to your website. You can also do on all your social media platforms. If you get into the business tools, they'll show you the demographics as well. So that's step one. If you know, so that you understand who the demographic is you're trying to reach, and then you can use that data, then go buy, you know, if you're buying social media, you can buy more of the same. Or if you're buying on somebody else's platform, whether it's radio or television, you know, look for the content that matches that demographic. Let me give you an example. If you're looking to reach, you know, a target audience of men age 35 to 45, and I'm just making this up. Sure. So if I'm going to do a traditional media route, I'm going to be asking the salesperson, what shows do you have that you know, matches that demographic? Let's say they have a hunting show that matches that. That's good for my product. I may advertise within that show, you know, versus, you know, Downton Abbey or some other show that reaches a different demographic.
No, that makes sense. So I'm curious, can you give, I know this is kind of a general question, but the big pushback I've seen, especially from startups or even businesses that I've done stuff in the past with, is they post something on social media, you know, maybe it's consistent for a month or two, and they don't really start seeing some of those results. Like, this stuff takes time. Do you maybe want to talk about some context around that? And because I find like a lot of people just give up too early and too quick because it's not, you know, getting them a million views right out of the gate.
Oh man, they're so true. You know, marketing is something that's all about frequency and consistency. Whatever you do, whether you're buying traditional media or you're trying the route of digital or social media, we all hear stories that are the exceptions to the rule. Right. And I think that's almost dangerous. Like, you'll hear that one person posted a video, it blew up and their business took off. The reason you're hearing about that is it's the exception to the rule. You know, totally. If it was normal, it would be boring and we wouldn't be talking about it. And I think that's something you have to give yourself some, you know, some understanding, some flexibility, some patience on that. So it does take time. You know, if you're buying traditional media, I tell people you need to buy it at minimum 26 weeks before you'll start to see results. Now think about that for a moment. 26 weeks before you start to see results. Well, let's unpack that. Why is that? Well, national average, the consumer has to see a commercial at minimum 7 times, but as many as 14 times before they register what the product's about and respond. We talked about it already. We have more content coming at us all the time. So if you're watching television and you see a commercial, you have to see it at least 7 times before you're like, oh, the product's about this and I'm interested. So you're not going to see the spot every single time it airs. So you have to have a frequency and consistency with that commercial spot so that your target, you know, demographic sees it 7 to 14 times before they respond to it. Same is true with anything you do online. Like you post a video, you put it out on social media. Did your target demographic see it? How long does it have to be out there before they see it? And so you do have to think the long-term game. You know, marketing is really about brand awareness, and it takes a long time to build brand awareness. Think about this, Kevin. Why does McDonald's or Coca-Cola or Ford or name any large brand, why are they still spending millions of dollars every year to market their company? I mean, I don't need McDonald's commercial to tell me McDonald's exist, but they spend that money because they understand it's about consistency and frequency to keep their business front and center.
Yeah, and memorable, right, is the big thing, right? It's just because there's so much competition in the fast food space, to use the McDonald's thing, right? So McDonald's wants to be the one restaurant you think about next time you want some fast food. Whether you like McDonald's or not is kind of irrelevant, right?
Yeah, and you know, with the large brands, I will tell you that it's twofold. One, it's that sense of urgency. I'm hungry now. And oh man, that McDonald's burger looks good. I'm going to go buy it. And so that's the reason why they're strategic as far as where they air their advertising. The second thing, just as a little nuance with the larger brands, they're really trying to reach the 18 to 24 year old. Right. Studies have shown that by the time we reach 25, we're pretty set in our ways. Sure. I've got 2 daughters, one who's 18 in college and another one who's 14. They're still making decisions. So even though their parents, you know, to use the fast food example, maybe we do go to McDonald's. We don't, by the way, not just, you know, but sure, maybe we do, but they want Chick-fil-A. And so they're making that decision themselves. So that's why a lot of the brand dollars are really spent trying to reach that 18 to 24 year old. But frequency and consistency is key across the board, no matter what.
Nope, makes some sense. So I want to talk about some other mediums. You cover some of the more traditional mediums in the book around newspapers, newsletters, magazines, you know, kind of email, stuff that I think are forgotten about a little bit these days when people are trying to promote their business and or startup. Do you want to dive a little bit deeper into that and why you think those are still relevant and important?
You know, one of the biggest misconceptions is that certain forms of media are dying. Media never dies. It just reinvents itself. 100%. Using the newspaper is a perfect example. You know, people are like, oh, well, newspaper's dead. Well, no, it's not. It's just moved over to a digital world. If you look at the subscriber count across the board, yes, daily newspaper subscriptions that go to your front door are down. Weekend, the Sunday editions are down. But then when you look at the rise of digital, there's actually more subscribers to newspapers today than there was 5 years ago. But people are subscribing to the digital edition. So I think that's always my caution when people are like, oh, well, newspaper's dead. I'm like, no, it's not. It's just reinvented itself. Same with radio. You know, most of the content people consume on apps are actually radio stations they're consuming on their smartphone. Most people, when they listen to music, now certainly you have Spotify, that's huge, but equally as huge is iHeart. Well, what's iHeart? iHeart's your local radio station. So when you open the iHeart app, you can listen to a variety of different stations. So, and then television. And television is, broadcast TV is big again, which sounds completely hilarious. Like I remember 10 years ago, when I started talking about antenna TV again, people looked at me like I was an idiot. You know, like, what are you talking about? Like, we got all these other forms. But what's happened is, you know, there's been this whole change in the last 10 years. I mean, you look at the sale of antenna, we sold more, and, you know, as a consumer, we purchased more antennas last year than we have in the last 5 years. I mean, it just continues to trend. What's happening is people realize, like, I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area in Texas, and I have an antenna. Now, I installed an outdoor antenna, but I get over 100 channels for free just through an antenna. So it's, when you think about where people are at and how they're consuming media, you just need to understand media is not dying. It just sort of evolves and changes. So if you're, you know, it gets down to where are the demographics you're trying to reach, and how can you reach them yourselves? And so I'm a big proponent in local radio, in local television, and local newspaper. I still think they're thriving. I think they're just not the sexy thing that people want to talk about.
Yeah, that's interesting. Especially if your target market is consuming that type of, or like your type of content on their medium. Does it really matter if it's 100 years old or invented yesterday, right? Like, who cares if that's where your target market is?
Right. And it's amazing how many people of all demographics still listen to radio, to use radio as an example. They don't think about it. It goes back to that. It's just not a thought process, because you get in your car, you turn it on and you drive, the radio is there. You're not thinking about it. But people do consume traditional forms of media all the time.
The other thing that I want your opinion on is, and you've kind of alluded to this earlier, is because there's so much choice these days, it's almost, and I've heard people say this, is they almost just want to turn on the radio or a television station and just tell me what to listen to or watch, because, like, I'm tired. I don't want to think about picking something and spending 20 minutes. I have 20 minutes. Just I'll watch whatever's on, or I'll listen to whatever's on, because, and it's roughly what I'm interested in because I'm on this station. Is that fair to say, or what are your thoughts around that?
No, there's actual studies that are showing that people do have decision fatigue. Decision fatigue is very real. You start your day off, you're fresh, you're ready to go. It's the reason why we all do well with our diets in the morning, and then by 8 o'clock at night, we're hitting the ice cream in the freezer, right? We're tired of making decisions. And that happens true with content as well. So they're absolutely, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me. It's in the book, but it was something like, it really surprised me when we started researching on the number of hours the average American watches of live television a week. I mean, it was up there. And I thought, wow. And, you know, I knew myself I did that, but I thought, well, I'm in media. I'm sort of prone to do that. But no, people do exactly what you're talking about, Kevin. They get home and they're tired. They've worked hard. They had their dinner and they just want to flip. They just want to flip through the channels and find something. They don't want to necessarily try to read the synopsis of different shows and movies and things like that during the work week. Also, live sports, still very big. You know, people watch live sports. Yeah. That's still a big topic there. But yeah, I think you're exactly right. People, and going back to how media reinvents itself, I consume media through YouTube TV. It's basically a virtual cable system. So you could tell me, oh, I've cut the cord. People are like, oh, I cut the cord. I don't pay money for cable. Well, do you pay YouTube TV? Because that's basically a cable system. It just comes through your internet. So I think, again, media is still there, still vibrant. People still consume it.
No, 100% agree. So we're kind of coming to the end of the show, but is there any other advice that you'd want to give to people that's maybe in the book or you've experienced, you know, just for being in the industry for so long?
You know, I think it, you know, just to kind of highlight what we've talked about, but really it gets down to whatever you decide to do, you need to have a plan in place. You need to have frequency and consistency, and it needs to match your overall marketing plan. One of the things we didn't touch on, I can add on the social media front, I'm really amazed on how many people, from a business perspective, they don't have a social media plan. And when I mean social media, so you know, think about how marketing should work. How marketing should work is you sit down and you plan out a calendar for the entire year on what you're going to promote. So if I looked at your P&L, and let's say you had a widget and it did really well in the summertime. So then I would ask you, if I'm kind of coaching you, like, okay, where do you want to spend your marketing dollars? Obviously, you do well in the summertime. Do you want to promote that product to make even more money to cover the rest of the time? And then what are you going to promote in your off season to really kind of continue to keep your product front and center? So you do that on a marketing standpoint, and people spend thousands of dollars hiring marketing agencies to do that, but then they don't do it for their social media. So you need to plan out your social media. What am I going to promote in January, February, March? If you plan it out ahead of time, have a strategy, you can actually create content around that and then make sure everything's consistent. So if you are spending dollars on radio and television or writing a blog, make sure your social media matches all of that. I'll leave it with one example, and it's AT&T as a brand. And again, I'm not getting any kind of endorsement from AT&T, but I use them example because they got the traditional brick and mortar stores. They had advertisement. They do everything, right? So whenever they're running the campaign, pay close attention. What you see in their commercials is going to be the same thing you hear on the radio, going to be the same thing you see on their digital sites. And when I walk into the store, guess what? They have signage that matches that campaign. And they spend way more dollars than you and I have to get to that conclusion. So here's my little secret tip. This is my secret sauce. Pay attention to what the large companies do. They have market research you don't have. And then how can you duplicate that with your own business and learn from it?
Oh, I think that's really good advice, especially in the startup space. I find so many companies don't do that. It's like, well, your trade show booth and your brochure and your business cards should match the same or have at least the same look and feel as your app and your marketing site. And I like, it sounds to me, it sounds crazy to say that, but I'm surprised by how many companies, all those things look like they're totally different companies from each other. So I think that's actually really good advice.
And even down to your email signature, like I'm
totally
working with businesses like, hey, you got 25 employees. They all have different email signatures. Make that consistent. You use it for marketing.
No, 100%. Well, Scott, sadly, we're out of time. So how about we close with mentioning where people can get more information about yourself, the book, and any other links you want to mention?
Yeah, so the book's available. You can go to MediaMattersBook.com, but I'll tell you, it's available anywhere you buy books. And I'm happy to say that the audio version has just hit. So if you are like me and you'd rather listen to the audiobook, you can find it on Audibles or wherever you like to download your audiobook. And the full title of the book is Media Matters, How to Leverage the Media to Grow Your Business. And if you want to find me online, I'm real easy. I got a common name, Kevin. So just Google Scott Miller Media and you'll find my LinkedIn, or Scott Miller CEO is where you'll find me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Perfect, Scott. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time of your day to be on the show, and I look forward to keeping in touch with you, and have a good rest of your day, man.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Okay, bye.
Thanks for listening. Please visit our website at buildingthefutureshow.com to join the free community, sign up for our newsletter, or to sponsor the show. The music is done by Electric Mantra. You can check him out at electricmantra.com. And keep building the future.